What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Her with Amina Brown. And this week is a behind the poetry episode. And if you are used to listening to the podcast, if you are a part of our Her Living Room on a weekly basis, you know that normally I don't have guests for my behind the poetry episodes. But today I have a very special guest without whom I wouldn't be here. My mom is here. So today, I'm taking y'all behind the poetry of my poem, God Bless Mom, which obviously was inspired by my mom. I thought it would be fun if she came into the Her Living Room. How you doing, Mom?
I'm doing good. Yes, into the Her Living Room. I am excited to be here. I've been waiting for this moment. Yes. Thank you for that lovely intro. I love it. Love it.
And y'all, the day of this recording, even though you will be hearing this weeks afterwards, but the day of this recording is actually my mom's birthday. She agreed that we could record this podcast on her birthday. So happy birthday, Mom. Hope you're having a good birthday so far.
Thank you. I am having a wonderful birthday. It started out real good, real early and real good. And it's continuing on. The partying continues on.
That's right. In this family, we celebrate extended birthdays. And so we have the actual day of one's birthday. And then one is able to decide if one wants to celebrate the entire month or celebrate 30 days from one's birthday or just make a year of it. We do all sorts of things. So we love to see that. I'm so glad you're here on your birthday, Mom. So before we get into this poem, I want to talk to y'all about how my mom is responsible for me becoming a writer and a performer. And I think there might be a behind the poetry episode when I did Roots and Wings where I may have told a little bit of this story. And I used to tell this story on stage all the time also. And whenever I've done like interviews and people would ask, you know, why did I want to write poetry or what inspired me to become a spoken word poet? There's a very particular story about my mom that I tell. My mom has been with me and heard me tell this story on stage before, but I've never had a moment where I could get my mom's side of the story for y'all to be able to hear this. So I want to start with this, Mom, and then we'll go into the poem. And there are a few other questions around the poem that I want to ask you, but when I tell my side of the story, Mom, I tell the people that the reason why I am a spoken word poet today is because you submitted me to a poetry competition without my knowledge. I want to start the beginning part of that is, do you recall telling me as a teenager that there was no privacy in your house. Do you remember saying that?
I do remember saying that. And I'm glad that I was that type of a mom, because also you all may not know, and let me know if you all have heard this story. You'll have to let her know, I guess, somehow people yes. can give you responses.
Yes.
But I started finding her poems when she was about 12 years old. And I would read them and I would be like finding all these pieces of paper balled up and thrown in a trash can. And I'm like, whose work is this? Who's doing this? Are you working on a project? And so finally, that's when I really realized that she was writing her own poems, but she did not feel comfortable yet sharing them. So yes, I do remember being that mom. I tried to make sure you had your own room and other things like that of your own, but I still am not ashamed of being that mom because I didn't abuse it. I don't think I did anyway.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so either. I mean, she basically told me, listen here, if you have a notebook, you got some notes. I mean, some of y'all listening are like, y'all write notes in class? Yes, because when I was in school, we didn't have cell phones or we didn't have ways like electronically to communicate to our friends. It was either the phone or handwritten notes. So my mom basically let me know early on, if I find it, I'm reading it. Mm-hmm. If it's a notebook, if it's a folded up note or whatever it is. And when I was doing stage shows, I would tell how there was a little boy I was writing. I must have been, maybe I was a sophomore or junior year in high school. Because fun fact, I went to Christian school for 9th and 10th grade, y'all, in San Antonio, Texas. And then I begged my mom to let me go to public school. Mm-hmm. Like if there had been PowerPoint presentations that I had access to then, I probably would have done a PowerPoint presentation to say to my mom, please let me go to public school. So she did. She let me go to public school my junior and senior year. So I graduated from Judson High School in San Antonio. Shout out to the Judson Rockets. And my junior year, this is how bad I was at science. I was taking a class called Chemistry for the Community. And there was a little boy in my class, Terrence, and he and I would write notes during class. Mm. And that's how I knew that you were really reading. Because I came home from school one time and you were like, who's Terrence? And I was like, oh, he's this boy in my chemistry class. And you were basically like, well, I'm not sending you to school for that kind of chemistry. So you need to focus on your schoolwork. Okay.
Please.
Okay. So let's talk about you came upon some of my notebooks. Because I remember you came to me and told me that you had read some of the things that I had written. And you told me that you thought that they were good, that they were good pieces of writing. You were encouraging me to keep writing. But of course, like many kids, I just thought, well, this is my mom, you know, she's probably going to think whatever I write is so great. Okay, so then I want to talk about the oratorical contest that used to happen at our church when I was growing up. Because I was growing up in a Black church in San Antonio. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Shout out to New Creation Christian Fellowship. And every year there was an oratorical competition where you could compete by either memorizing the work of other poets or other writers, mm-hmm. or you could write something yourself. And you were competing like against your own age group. And I competed many years and never won. And Mom, I would like you to speak to what your feelings were at that time about why I wasn't winning, or what you felt we were driving away and I still was not winning like higher honors in that competition.
Well, first of all, I had to maintain my composure because I felt that every time you didn't win, I felt that you didn't win because they didn't know about how good of a writer you were. But also being a mom, now this is true. Being a mom, I just feel that my child should have won every contest. I mean, even if you were doing Maya Angelou's poems or whoever poem you did, you should have just won the contest. It was an oratorical contest. And shout out to our church in San Antonio. They did encourage a lot with the arts. And I'm so grateful for that, for you, because you fit right in.
Yeah.
So my feelings at that time, I had to keep my composure. My feelings were that you should have won. But also, I feel that you would be more of a competitor if you would present your own writing. But I knew that you had already expressed that you didn't feel you wanted to share all your poems with people. So I kind of had to think about it. And then our youth pastor, he told me at the time about the contest.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Our youth pastor, which was Steve Tucker at the time, told me about the contest. Steve Tucker was either the assistant or he was the actual youth pastor.
No, he was the assistant still because Elder Campbell was still the youth pastor then. But they were like working together.
They were working together and they had already told me about the contest. Yeah. And because I was a volunteer youth leader. So he told me about the contest and I was just like, okay, so Mina's going to present her poetry. I'm knowing. So I'm reminding you and I keep going back to him, finding out if he's heard anything, if he knows if you submitted. And then I finally asked you again, had you submitted it? And you said no. And during that time, which I am still a reader, during that time, I love to read behind the scenes stories about other writers. Mm-hmm. And during that time, for whatever reason, I was reading a book, and I don't remember what book it was by Stephen King, but I was reading a book about Stephen King. I had read a book he'd written, but I was reading a book about him. And the story was from his wife that he majored in English. And I may get some of the facts wrong, but he majored in English. He was a teacher, professor, something like that. He hated it. And every time he would submit a book to a publisher, it would get rejected. Mm-hmm. Well, when he wrote Carrie, and I'm sure a lot of these listeners out here have heard of the movie Carrie. Mm-hmm. Well, that's based on a book by Stephen King. Mm-hmm. Well, his wife found a manuscript, even though he had been rejected many times for other books. His wife found a manuscript in the trash. She took it out of the trash and she mailed it in. And that's literally the first time he actually got paid for a manuscript.
Wow.
A book. You know, I guess whatever you would call the initial book. And he got paid for that. That put him on the map.
Wow.
And I forget what it was. It was something like huge amount at that time. It was like $3,000. He got a book advance. Mm-hmm. And so when I read that, I was really inspired by that. So I just started doing more research on him and how he got to that point and how his wife was frustrated at the time because she knew that he was a good writer. But he just had never hit that one book. And Carrie was the book for him.
Yeah.
And we see Stephen King all over the place. So then I got to thinking, I said, I'm going to ask Mina one more time. Has she submitted her poetry?
Did not.
And she said no. And, you know, in her teenage way, she was like, no, ma'am, I didn't. So I found out that they were at the office working. They were at the church office working that day. And I could go up there and use the fax machine.
To circle back to them that they were in cahoots with you because I didn't know about that. Okay, continue.
So I had the forms already and it had her name, everything filled out. I knew some of her poems that we had printed out. And so I just sent them in. Did not know she was going to win, but I had confidence that at least it was worth them seeing her poetry.
I do not remember you asking me about the contest in particular. I don't remember that part, maybe because I blocked it out and I had no intentions of entering. But I do remember you bringing up to me repeatedly that, you know, you wanted to see me like doing more with my writing and stuff. And I just really did not feel confident about it. Like when I would memorize Maya Angelou's, you know, Phenomenal Woman, like I could feel confident performing it because I knew I could get it down, memorized, and I could say it and everything. And like do well on stage, but something about the idea of my own work out there, I don't know, something about that made me feel like afraid and it would just like stunt me. Like I couldn't do anything. So anytime I'm imagining that you were asking me about this contest in my mind, I'm like, no, like who else would like this poetry? That's how like not confident I felt about it. And the contest that my mom was submitting me for, that I didn't know she was submitting me for, was the NAACP's ACT SO competition. And ACT SO was an acronym. And y'all, I'm so sorry that I cannot remember what all the words were, but I know it was like arts. And I know there was science. There were like different categories that you could submit yourself for. And so it had been a really big thing in the Black community because it gave a lot of students opportunities in these different areas to be celebrated. And there was a local competition. But then if you won locally, then you would get a chance to also compete nationally. There was a national ACT SO competition. So if you won in the science category in your local city, then all the winners from your local city would pool together, the community would pool together, and raise money to help those kids and the chaperones get to where the national competition was. So at the time that my mom is submitting this, I'm actually in my, I wonder if that was my junior year, if that was before my senior year. That's what I think. I think that that's what I'm thinking about, right? I think it was the summer before my, I can't remember if it was the summer before my senior year or if you submitted it my senior year. And we went to Act So the summer before I went to college. That's the part I can't remember.
I can't remember that part either. It was either the junior year or it was the summer before your senior year.
It ended up that nationals were in Atlanta, mm-hmm. whatever year you submitted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to circle back to how we discovered that I won the thing. But I ended up seeing Spelman, which y'all know as listeners that that is my alma mater. We didn't get to go actually on campus, but I did get to see Spelman's campus like from afar. That was the closest I'd ever gotten until moving in. Okay, so let's circle back into the story now. You went up to the church
mm-hmm.
while my youth pastor and one of the other youth leaders were up there working and faxed this entry
yes.
into the competition. Okay, mm-hmm. so then when they say if you won or not, are they mailing it back to you? Like, how did you find out? Or did they call you? Like, how did you find out that I actually won the thing?
Well, if I remember it correctly, I got a phone call, but also I think they contacted one of the youth ministers. We'll have to ask them, do they remember? Do they remember being contacted? But they contacted us by phone and by letter.
Okay.
Because the local chapter, and I know it's hurting a lot of people that's hearing about that we faxed it. We got a phone call.
It wasn't no email, y'all. Okay. We just barely had AOL at that time. And not everybody even had AOL. It couldn't be depended on. Okay?
Right. So they sent a letter and they called.
Okay.
And that's when I found out that I was notified that you were selected and that they wanted your poem to be presented at the local AXO contest.
Mm-hmm.
And that you were one of the finalists. And I had no idea what that was going to mean. I was just excited that someone had finally recognized your poetry.
Right.
And that it was someone other than me, that it was outside of me, even though I know I was kind of bootlegged by submitting it without your permission.
It worked out. So I can't really hate on that. It worked out. Okay, so my memory of how you told me that I won is that it was when you told me it was pretty close to when I would have had to go there and like read the poem, you know? So in my memory, it felt like it was a Saturday. I know it was a Saturday when you had to go there because mm-hmm. all the community was going to gather together.
Right.
All the different other kids that were finalists in all the different categories. I know it was on a Saturday, but I felt like you notified me. I was finding out like on a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
It was a couple of days. It felt like it wasn't that long between when you told me and when we were actually going to go to there. And you came to me so excited. You were like, you won this contest. You won something. And so we have to go there. Like, as a part of you winning something, we have to go there. And you have to read them, like, your poem. And as you were talking is when I'm starting to realize, because I'm like, well, how could I win something that I didn't, like, submit anything for? And then the more you were talking to me, I was like, oh, she sent something of mine there. And now that's the only way I can like accept my winnings, my certificate or whatever, you know, trophy, whatever they were going to give all of us.
Right.
And y'all, I know that my mom, you know, some of you are my friends in real life. Y'all know my mom in real life. And a lot of people, even some of you have met my mom at events because we travel together as well. And y'all meet my mom and y'all be like, I love your mom. She's so sweet. Listen, I love my mom too. Okay. But I'm going to tell you right now that the lady that's on this podcast episode is very different from the lady that raised me. Okay. So when she came to me and she said, hey, you won this, she didn't say, would you like to go to there on Saturday? She was like, we going on Saturday because you won this and we gonna go there and you gonna read your poems. And I want to tell y'all that I, you know, stood my ground and was like, I will not go there. But I'm gonna tell you that I was afraid of her a little bit. Okay. I was afraid of her. Those of you that have Black mothers, you understand. Okay. There's a certain way she didn't ask me no questions. So I knew it wasn't really no room to be having a discussion about that. It was like, hey, we going over there. So you got however many days between now and when that thing is to get yourself together to do this. So I was kind of mumbling under my breath a little bit. But when she was like, we going, I was like, yeah, no, yeah, sure. That sounds good. Let's do that. Let's do that. So I get there and most of the people in the audience are not people that we know.
Right.
Because it was like a totally different cross section of Black folks in San Antonio, really. Mm-hmm. There weren't really a lot of people there that we went to church with, if anybody. Like most everybody there, they were not people that I remember us knowing.
No.
Right?
You're right. You're right.
Okay. So I went there. First of all, I didn't talk to y'all about this poem and it's not going to be read over this podcast episode. But the poem that my mom found was this poem I had written called Chocolate Mister.
Ooh, yes.
And so Chocolate Mister had been selected. Well, I see, I didn't remember the finalist part. So Chocolate Mister had been selected as a finalist and I had to go there and read it. Mm-hmm. And we were not finding out until we got there if I was actually the winner in that category. Mm-hmm. Is that how you remember it?
That's how I remember
it. Okay. So I read the poem and y'all, all I can remember, I'm 17 at the time. So this was my senior year of high school, now that I'm remembering that. I'm 17 and I remember reading this poem that I've read to a lot of my friends. You know, I wouldn't really read my poems like in a public setting, but I would like if I was talking to my friends on the phone, I would read it to them. Or sometimes when we were like in between classes or something or at lunch, I would read poems to them. So I had read the poem like several times by this time, but never in front of like an audience. So when y'all are remembering the Behind the Poetry episode for Roots and Wings, in Roots and Wings, I'm telling really the second time, actually, that I think I ever really performed a poem of my own in a public setting. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that time in Roots and Wings, when I was in Alabama at that bookstore, I had actually memorized Chocolate Mister by that time. Mm-hmm. So that was my first time ever saying one of my poems, like from memory in public.
Right.
But this time at the Act So competition was the first time I'd ever read it in a public setting. So I had the papers in front of me and I was reading it. And all I can remember is seeing like the adults like leaning in when I was reading the poem. And I remember that feeling so fascinating to me because I just thought, you know, I'm 17, I'm a kid, you know, these are like grown folks who read books and seen films. They've been exposed to art, you know, like they don't have any reason to be like leaning into what I have to say. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the first times that I felt like, wow, like this isn't as scary now that I'm here. It's not as scary as I imagined it was going to be. And apparently maybe I do have something to say that is important enough that not just my friends from school, but like grown people are like enjoying this thing that I've written.
Absolutely.
So honestly, y'all, my mom is completely responsible for me becoming a spoken word poet because that really was like I got bit by the bug then. Then it was like, oh, now I see how these things I write are also like to be performed, to be spoken, that that's also something that I can do well.
Yes.
So I think, you know, whenever I tell people this story, Mom, I always tell them, you really did a good job in that moment of pushing me beyond my comfort zone because I never would have believed in myself, you know, or pushed myself to think that my work could do that or that I could do that. And the fact that you did that behind my back. Totally won out here, Mom. That was a really good parenting choice, you know? So you got to give yourself a pat on the back about that.
Thank you. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do that, I think I was propelled because spiritually, I kept remembering a time when I had listened to some person that was talking to us about parenting our children during that time. And the person was encouraging us to know what y'all's dreams are and know what God was telling us about what your gifts were. Mm-hmm. And I saw that that was one of your gifts. I didn't know that it was going to, what it was going to turn into, but I knew that it was a gift. You had other gifts too. You had other things that you like doing. But I, when I saw that, I just realized, okay, this is something. And I have to try to help her get to this because she will have a chance to use it in other ways. If it's just you writing books or whatever, I didn't know how it was going to really be expressed. I just remember that person saying, always try to find out something about your child that they're good at.
Right.
And if they have a dream for something, then try to see if you as a parent can be in their dream with them in your own way.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what propelled me. And so, of course, when I read that story about Stephen King, it was on.
Okay.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases, and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Are you looking to build this year? If so, there is no better time than right now to start planning and to get your spot on the construction schedule. If you need a garage, a stall barn, a storage for vehicles, RV, boat, collectibles, or even a shop for your farm, hobbies, or car restoration projects, visit MortonBuildings.com and start your construction process. With superior materials, craftsmanship, best-in-class warranty, Morton Buildings are made to last for generations. At Morton, the difference is in the details. From their cutting-edge innovations to their craftsmen in the field, they are dedicated to surpassing expectations. Their legacy of excellence spans more than 120 years, and Morton Buildings is 100% employee-owned with more than a quarter million satisfied customers. That means they're the industry leader you can trust. When you choose Morton, you'll experience quality at every step of the building process, starting before the walls even go up. Visit MortonBuildings.com to get started today.
Thing I have to say about you, Mom, just, you know, of course, now having 40 plus years of life, having been your daughter, you know, one thing I'll say about my mom, y'all, is my mom is a celebrator to the end. Okay. Like, my mom is ready to cheer you on. You doing it. She's ready to support you. Like, I always have this funny story and this memory I have of when I went from Christian to public school. You know, here's me showing up to this big Texas school, big football school, big track and field school. Mm-hmm. And I remember this coach coming into one of my classes to talk to the other athletes and looking at me and going, stand up. And I stood up and she said, you meet me on the track at 3 o'clock. And I was so scared. So I just went out there and y'all, first of all, I'm a terrible athlete. Okay. That's maybe in another lifetime. Maybe had I had my matriculation in school gone differently, maybe I would have made a good athlete, but I'm really not good at that. But the coach had asked me to come out there, so I did. And those of you that have children or that remember when you were a teenager, sometimes, you know, your parents, when you get home from school, your parents are like, how was school today? You know, and you kind of like, bop, 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 you know, school, 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 class, class, soft friends, you know, you're kind of like too cool for school to be like talking to your parents, giving them lots of details. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that I must have said to my mom, like, yeah, and then this lady came in and she said she would meet her at the track. So I guess I did. And I'm like, gonna go out there, I guess, and see how that happens. Anyways, boop, boop, boop. I go to my room, do my homework, talk on the phone to my friends. Y'all, I lied to y'all not. My mom showed up to the track. Do y'all understand me? She showed up to track practice. This isn't a meet, Okay. This isn't a meet. This isn't the state competition. My mom showed up to track practice with my sister, who's also been on this podcast. So if I'm 17, my sister's like six. So I'm assuming what my mom probably went and picked my sister up from school, took her and brought her over. My mom, I get to practice. My mom is sitting in the bleachers with my sister, y'all.
Mina, go Mina!
I remember this.
Yes!
Oh, go. I'm so excited.
Yes, Mina, go, girl. Yes!
Yes.
Do it, Mina.
At the practice. That's how much my mom believed in us as her children. She was like, I'm not waiting till you get to the Olympics. I don't care that this is your first practice. I'm going to cheer for you like you are winning the game. And of course, when you're a teenager, I just felt like mortified.
I felt so embarrassed.
But now as an adult, I'm like, yo, my mom like really loved me like that. Like she really believed in me like that. That she was like, I'm going to come out here and let you know. Even my mom as a single mama working as hard as you worked, you know, there were some times that your work schedule just, it wasn't going to allow for you to be able to be like, I can step into your class in the middle of the day and bring everybody these cookies or whatever. There were just some times your schedule wasn't going to allow for that because you were providing for us by yourself. But there were moments when you could be there like that. You would be there with the bells on, y'all. Okay. My mom is not playing these games at all.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I was so excited for you. And you know, I come from a long line of people that encourage one another. And my mom, my grandma, you know, whatever you needed, they would just be like, you got it. You can do it. You know, what in their own way, they encourage you and they show the love. So I just think it just, it, you know, it just kind of like ballooned or blossomed in me when it came to you. And then, of course, you know, when it came to your sister, I was just like, when I found out something about athletics, I was like, what? You gonna try for the track team? Yes, I'm there. Let's go. I was ready.
Okay, Mom, let's dig into this poem now. Let's get into God Bless Mom, which is a poem that I wrote about my mom. So as usual in a Behind the Poetry episode, we're going to play a recording of the poem so that you can hear the poem in full. Know that my mom is not new to this poem. My mom has heard this poem many, many times. But now we're going to get a chance to talk through it so that she can share with you her real life experiences that I'm also writing about in the poem. So let's take a listen to God Bless Mom.
My mother read books to the swollen stomach that would become me. Read about what to expect when you're expecting, about disciples, apostles, prophets, sinners, and saints, until her semicolon broke, sending amniotic vowels and consonants to splitting apart. The time between my sentences grew less than 5 minutes apart. My paragraph had arrived, and her margins stretched 10 centimeters wide, so quickly that there would be no time for epidural or explanation. She must breathe, push, labor, count to 10, and then count 10 fingers and 10 toes. Trace her fingers along the lines of little eyes, little ears, little mouth, little nose. And from the light of touch lamp on nightstand, she read me golden books, sat me down in Peter's chair, kicked me rhymes from the Berenstain Bears. We put our hands together and said our prayers. That God would bless Teddy Ruxpin. Barbie and Ken. That God would bless Sydney, my one-eye stuffed animal koala bear best friend. That God would bless Daddy and Grandma right before Mom showed me where the wild things are. See, she taught me to read until I was reading her to sleep. Words given to me by the number 5 and letter A on Sesame Street. And oh, the places I would go with Sam Green Eggs and ham in tow, searching for golden tickets and Roald Dahl's prose. I wanted to float on giant peaches with James. Y'all be this one? Read Beverly Cleary, Ramona, and Beezus until I was Amina the Brave. And I never really went through that stage of slipping my little girl feet into my mom's heels to play dress up. I just wanted to read her library when I grew up. hoping I could be one of you Pharaoh's beautiful daughters, and maybe one day turn the pages of Tar Baby. See, she taught me to find my roots in the handshake of Alex Haley, yeah. Taught me to love the stale paper scent of the library, to treasure books, cards, and stationery. And even today, years later, she joins me at kitchen table talking womanhood over the scent of Earl Grey tea, taking in all the mystery, life's Anne Walter Mosley's, trading Baldwin and Baraka, singing yeah. songs of Solomon, exchanging journals, wisdom, and pens. And she reminds me with a skillful subtlety that sometimes this is where the sidewalk ends, that many storylines will come to an end only for better ones to begin, that life is a page turner yeah. and you should write your own plot twists, that many will call themselves writers, but there is only one author who knows the end from the beginning, and sometimes the best and hardest thing you'll ever do in your life is trust him. Never forget, you pay close attention to your character. And remember that people are characters. They come and go, but never discount them. People are characters, and your story won't happen without them. See, there is light in the attic, at the end of tunnels, and in her eyes. So tonight, before I shut off nightstand light, I pray that God will bless Mom, and I'll read myself to sleep.
Not me and my mom both in here in our feelings. Oh, hear that poem, man. That poem is from my first live album, Live at Java Monkey. Ugh, I can't believe how long ago that was now. So what made me want to write this poem is, I think I was actually working on another poem, and those beginning lines came to me about you, Mom. And oh. I was supposed to be working on the other poem, but God Bless Mom came to me more quickly than whatever it was I was working on. And I was happy about the way it came to me because, of course, you know, like many poets and many songwriters, you know, have dedicated pieces to their mothers, you know. And I was like, you know, I love my mom. I would love to have a poem about my mom, but I didn't want it to be like a generic mama poem. I didn't want it to be a poem that's for everybody's mom. I wanted it to be a poem that was very specific to you. So then when that motif, you know, came in my mind about the words and the sentences and the books, and then like that's always been like a bonding thing between you and I, like reading together when I was little and going to all these bookstores and greeting card stores growing up, you know, that felt like, oh yes, this is my mom's poem. You know, this is very specifically about Jean Brown and what my experience was, you know, growing up with you. Mm-hmm. So I was really, really happy to see how the poem turned out. And since you're here with me, Mom, I would love to talk to you about some of that real life story behind writing the poem, because my experience being your kid was you had a big wall unit. I don't know if it's because I was coming here to see you today, but I actually like dreamed about that wall unit last night. You had a tall, like bamboo wall unit.
Yep, I remember it well.
And it just had books and books and books and books. And y'all, I remember as a kid going to that wall unit and picking out a book sometimes and opening it up. And like, I was just too young to understand what I was reading, you know? Right, like, I mean, you had like Tar Baby on that shelf.
Yeah.
You had The Temple of My Familiar by Alice Walker, you know, on your shelves.
Yes.
And so I remember pulling out those books sometimes, and I could tell from what little I could understand that it was beautiful, but I wasn't old enough and had not gone to school enough to really understand what I was reading. So that always, you know, that line in the poem is so true, that that's really what I wanted to do, was like get old enough that I could understand these beautiful books you had. So can you think of what made you love reading, or what made you really become this like connoisseur of books and stories?
I think it started when I was younger, because my mom used to take us to the library. But when I was in school, they encouraged us to read so many books. And it's interesting, because now I'm going back to that, to where I'm trying to increase the number of books that I read per month. Mm-hmm. So that hopefully by the end of a year, there's a large amount. Because, of course, we didn't have the internet.
Right.
We didn't have cell phones. So that didn't interfere with our reading time. So that's how it started for me. And I can remember in high school, especially in high school, there was just this big, I was in a band when I was in high school. And so by me being in the marching band, you know, we read a lot. He told us a lot about music, you know, our instructor did, but also our English teacher. I loved English. And I took this literature course, and that really catapulted me to really even the foundation that I had. It made me read even more. Because in a literature class, we started reading Shakespeare. We started reading other authors. You know, some were people of color, some were not. But because I just really loved reading, at that time, it just became, I don't know, it just became a thing, a bigger thing in my life. And to the point where even my classmates, they would say, you're just trying to be the teacher's pet. Because we would read Shakespeare and I would go home and read it again. And so when we came to class, the teacher would ask questions and I would answer them, or I would give her my opinion. Or even if we read something, say, for example, if we read something about Martin Luther King or Malcolm X or somebody like that, it just interested me more to want to read it more.
Right.
So as a child, going to the library and then being encouraged to read and seeing my mom read. And then, of course, in church, of course, they read the Bible. We went to Sunday school and we had a little booklet that we would read. Mm-hmm. But that was the foundation of just actually learning how to read. But in high school is when it really, really, just really kicked off. And I love, to this day, I love Shakespeare. I mean, I just love it. And I love all of the authors that I've read, like the ones that you mentioned, you know, Alice Walker. Yeah. I mean, some of those women that wrote, you know, and there were some male ones too, Langston Hughes. I read Langston Hughes too. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of people of color books that they wrote. And now I'm catching up on some of the newer books that I hadn't heard of from some of the times that we have now. We have a lot of writers now that I'm catching up on some of the books that they've written. And it's just really, really been, I mean, it's just amazing. The thing about reading, you could go to another world. You go to another country. I may be in Georgia, but I could be in Africa with this person.
Right.
You know, I'm reading about Nelson Mandela or some other person who went through something. I don't know. It just, it's stimulating to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I would say that was the time when it really got to where I was just like, I'm reading all this stuff. And then I was in the military later, I was stationed in D.C. Mm-hmm. And D.C. at that time that I was there was a mecca. And it still is. I just haven't lived there in a long time. But there were so many opportunities to actually meet these authors like Alex Haley. And it was just so many authors that I met that it was just amazing. I had read their books when I was in high school. So when I went to something in D.C. and that person was there, it was just amazing to me.
Yeah. And I remember because, you know, with Keita and I being almost 11 years apart. So I was 10 when you were pregnant with Keita. Mm-hmm. And I remember it being really important to you that we would be reading, you know, while you were pregnant. And you also told me that when you were pregnant with me, you did the same thing. You said that you read to us even when you were pregnant. What was it that made you, you know, just that early on? And even, you know, as we were young children, even before we could read ourselves, like, why was it so important to you that we would also be exposed to good stories and exposed to good books?
For one thing, I learned that when a mother is pregnant with a child, I learned that even though the child is in utero, the child can hear. That's the reason why they recognize their parents' voices, you know, when they're actually born. But also that it's a reading to them and hearing your voice is a stimulation. It stimulates their nerves. You know, they're benefiting from that.
Yeah.
So when I learned that, that's what made me want to read to you even more. And also music. That's another, because the hearing of the fetus when they're inside their mama, the hearing is very acute.
Mm.
And that's the reason why a lot of times people will say, well, I don't know how they seem like they recognize this person's voice. Well, it's because they've been hearing this person's voice all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever age, you know, I forget what the weeks were, but there's certain weeks where their hearing is just really like they're really hearing their surroundings. So then it became important to me once I found that out. After you all were born, it became important because I wanted you to be able to think.
Mm.
And not just think in one realm. I wanted your mind to be expanded to where you knew things, whether it was history or if it was nonfiction or if it was fiction. And that was important to me because I wanted you to be an independent thinker. And when I was in nursing school, they taught us that. And I was thinking to myself, wow, I grew up like this.
Right.
You know, learning how to read something and interpret it, reading a newspaper or reading just an article. And so I wanted y'all to be able to, as little girls, I wanted y'all to be able to read a book, to know about what literature was out here, and to know what was being said in the books.
Mm-hmm.
If you could read it, you could do it if you needed to do a certain thing.
Right.
And I also knew that it would enhance your ability. I learned that from reading. I read a lot of psychology books when you were young, too. Mm-hmm. And so I think that influenced me because they were talking about, this one psychologist was talking about how important that was in the first year one to year five.
Mm.
And so that really got me going. That just really got me going. It was like, that was just made for me. When I read, I would read books where the psychologist would say, oh, you know, reading to children, it helps their development. And so every year I would look up what words you were supposed to be saying. And I learned that you started talking at a young age.
Right.
You started talking, even though other people thought you were a quiet child, but you started talking at a very young age. And so I attribute that to the fact that you were bright anyway, but also it helped you to formulate your words because I started reading to you and then you started reading. After a while, you started reading to me and I would fall asleep.
Right. That's true. Like that line in the poem, y'all, is very true because my mom being a nurse and depending on if she was just getting off from a shift and putting me to bed or if she was putting me to bed after, you know, depending on how her schedule was going. So as I got older, I do remember by the time I was 5 or 6, I would have some nights where I would start reading and you would go to sleep, but I would feel so like accomplished.
Yes.
That
yes.
Like I was getting to read to you till you went to sleep, you know. And one thing I will say, you know, to y'all about my mom, you know, when you brought up critical thinking, mom, that my sister and I talk about this all the time. And this is one of the things I really do love about you, mom, that even though, of course, as my sister and I both have, you know, grown up and become grown women, we all three of us have, you know, different ways that we see the world and our different opinions or thoughts on different things. Mm-hmm. And one thing about my mom is, my mom is open to having a conversation with mm-hmm, you. Mm-hmm. Now, you might be saying some things that she doesn't like, or you might be saying some things that she doesn't agree with. And her jawline might be tight about what you're saying. But if it's this like sort of intellectual discourse, if there's an opportunity for you to be like, okay, there's another perspective for me to learn or hear from, even if you walk away from the conversation and you're like, I still do not agree with the fact that you said that, you know, like even now for us as adult women, you know, mm-hmm. having a relationship with you as our mom, like that's one of the things I love that I'm like, sometimes aww. I look at Keita and I'll be like, I know mom didn't like that, but you see how she like stuck with us.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I stick with you. I stick with you. As they say, I ride with you, you know, whatever. I mean, that's what family does. And it's just the same way if you have a best friend, even though your best friend might be saying something that you don't agree with, because you love them and because you know, where they're coming from. You may not understand everything. And you all just expand me because there's some books that I hadn't heard of. And I'll ask you all about this book or have you heard of this or what does this exactly mean? I like the fact that you can explain it.
Yeah.
And that if I keep an open mind, that I can become more of a person because I'm understanding.
Right.
Because if we all agreed about everything, that would make us pretty much like clones or robots or whatever.
Right.
And so that's how we stimulate our brains, how we stimulate ourselves spiritually and emotionally. And so we just love it. And I remember one time when we would all go to Barnes and Nobles. We could stay at Barnes and Nobles all day.
Matt and I were dating and he would ask me, you know, what's your family's like holiday traditions? And I was like, oh yeah, well, my mom's side of the family, whenever we spend Thanksgiving together, like with our extended family, like mom, grandma, my aunts and uncles, I was like, yeah, you know, we have Thanksgiving on Thursday. And then on Black Friday, we go to Barnes and Noble and just hang out there all day. Matt looked at me like, say what now? He's like, so what are y'all doing when you go in there? And I was like, well, sometimes grandma plays Scrabble. Yes. And we just like read magazines and read books. And I could just see Matt's eyes glazing over like, and y'all feel like this is a good time. Okay. Okay. I got to read some books the day after Thanksgiving. Can't
wait. Yes,
you know,
yes.
But that is totally like very true of our family, mm-hmm. y'all. Like really, it's a family of readers and critical thinkers, lovers of words, which I love that. Okay, I want to switch gears, mom, and let's talk about tea for a little bit, because in this poem, I have that line there, which is still sort of, if people were to ask me, you know, when I close my eyes and think of like my mom's house, you know, mm-hmm. what do I think of? And I'm like, that scene that I'm describing in the book where I'm sitting at the kitchen table with you, wherever your kitchen table was mm-hmm. in San Antonio, once you moved here, the different places you've lived since you've lived here. It's always this moment of like sitting there at the table, drinking tea with you, just talking about life. And Earl Grey tea in particular is a tea that whenever I smell like the scent of that tea, like mm-hmm. I always think of you, because that's the first tea I remember drinking with you, that and English breakfast
were
two teas you loved. So do you know what brought on your love for tea? I mean, I know you're also like a lover of coffee too.
Yes.
But you drank tea with us too. So like what brought about your love for tea?
Well, I love Earl Grey. I think the Earl Grey came in because at some point in my life, I started reading. Well, there's different schools of thought. I started reading about how bad coffee was for you. But then I started reading about it's good to drink coffee. And so when I started reading up on that, then I started trying to learn about different teas that you could drink. And I didn't know, I was a novice at the time. I didn't know a lot. So I started with that one because I had heard that that one was a real good one to drink, you know, in the morning. And so that's probably what led me to trying that one first
mm-hmm.
when I first heard about it. Then later on, I found out about how, you know, the different teas have different flavors. You can buy teas that have flavors and it's not necessarily caffeine. But I like Earl Grey. I like Earl Grey because it does have caffeine.
Yeah, it does.
I'm going to be honest. Yeah, I'm just go ahead and be honest. Okay.
It's a good caffeinated tea.
Yeah, it's a good caffeinated. And it's just something about the aroma of it when you're drinking it.
Yeah.
Even before you drink it, it's kind of like coffee in a way, don't you mm-hmm. think? Because you could go into Starbucks or some familiar coffee shop, and even if you don't drink coffee, just the smell of the coffee does something to you.
Right.
Because your body, you know, your body is going to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either it smells good or it may smell like burnt coffee if it's not the right coffee shop. But, you know, that tea is just so therapeutic. So then this ties back to the reading.
Okay.
So then I started reading about the healing properties of tea.
Oh.
So after I tried the Earl Grey and the English tea that you mentioned, the breakfast tea, then I started finding out there's different teas that can help you as far as when you're trying to heal up. That's the reason why when people would get a cold, I remember somebody saying, would you like some hot tea? And then they would serve it to you with honey, because honey is very therapeutic mm-hmm. also. And so I just feel like that just tied me into it. And then I have a friend, my best friend, Naima. She is I call her a tea guru. And she was trying to tell me how to get off caffeine, which I still don't know that that's a good thing to do.
It's hard.
But I understand. Mm-hmm. So she helped me. She helped show me some other teas, like a lot of the African teas. Some of the African teas you can buy, like the Robo's tea, have no caffeine. Some have some caffeine. And when we went to Africa that time, mm-hmm. I got a chance to drink some actual African tea in Africa.
This is amazing.
So that's how I got started with the tea. And then once I read about it, that it is good for you, it has some healing properties, I was sold.
Like, that's how I know I'm my mom's daughter, because after Matt and I moved into the house we live in now, I had all this tea. I was trying to figure out how do I store it, you know? And so, you know how when you move into a house, you know, my mom moved into her house a couple of years ago, too. And so when you're moving into your house, you're always researching, you know, different things people do, how they store different things. And I saw somebody had a tea drawer mm-hmm. in their house instead of the cabinets, because I couldn't figure out what the cabinets we had. So, y'all, I have the largest tea drawer I've ever had in my whole life, but it works out so great. Because between both of our houses, we both know there's enough tea to have. When mom comes over, she knows I'll have different teas I'm trying out, and I'll come to her house and she'll have a tea I've never heard before, so I can try that out. So that is one of my favorite memories with you. I wanted to circle back to the Alex Haley line in this poem. Because I don't know that I've often shared this story, but when we were in DC, mom is true to what she's saying, that I just have such great childhood memories of us growing up in the DMV. Shout out to those of you that are in the DMV right now. We were living in Silver Spring, mm-hmm. Maryland, and you worked in DC, worked at two big hospitals there in our time living there. You worked at what was then Walter Reed,
mm-hmm.
which was a very big medical center at the time. And you also worked at George Washington University Hospital, which was another big medical center to have worked at there.
Yeah.
But at the time, I don't know if this still happens in D.C. or not. But back then, y'all, this would have been late 80s, early 90s. There was an event called Black Family Day that was like a big old festival on the National Mall. Mm-hmm. And there would be vendors there selling jewelry and clothing and purses and bags. There'd be performances and like famous Black people would come and they would have different tents set up. And some of them were authors. I remember we met Esther Roll.
Yes.
Who starred in many things, but she was most well known to me from having starred in Good Times.
Yeah.
As well as having starred in A Raisin in the Sun mm-hmm. as well.
That's right.
And so like you would be able to line up with your family and like actually physically shake hands with this like famous Black person that came to give of their time, you know. I was really and still am very just fascinated with Roots and Alex Haley. My mom is diehard. Okay. Like when Alex Haley had written the autobiography of Malcolm X, right? When he and Malcolm X had worked on that together, when the movie came out, I was a preteen. Mm-hmm. Maybe I was preteen, probably like junior high student. Probably, yeah. Older than preteen. Junior high student when the movie came out, and y'all, not my mom telling me that morning that I wasn't going to school and I need to read this autobiography. She handed me the Malcolm X autobiography by Alex Haley, and she was like, you read this till I get home. And when I get home, we go into the movie. Okay. So this same Alex Haley, before we moved to Texas, I must have been mom. I mean, I had to be eight. Yeah, or nine so. Years old, because it was before Keita was born.
Yeah.
And we stood in line. You know, mm-hmm. it was a long line because, of course, Alex Haley means a lot to the Black community. And especially at that time, mm-hmm. you know, Roots, the miniseries having been out, yeah. Roots having been a New York Times bestseller and everything. And so we stood in line. You know, you stood in there with me until we could meet Alex Haley in person. And I like shook his hand. And, you know, I think at that time, you know, you had told him I, you know, wanted to be a writer mm-hmm. and everything. And like just even having that moment as an 8-year old, like in this poem, y'all, when I say like the handshake of Alex Haley, like I literally meant my mom stood in line with me to help me meet him. You know, I mean, that was such a wonderful memory.
Yes. You were little. I think you might have been about 8 or 9.
Yeah.
It was amazing to me to get to meet him. We met Esther Roll, like you mentioned, and we met the young actor that played, at that time, he was very young, that played Theo.
Oh, Malcolm Jamal Warner. That's right.
We met him. He was amazing.
That's right.
But meeting Alex Haley, that was just...
Yeah.
Like, and of course, it was a once in a lifetime event. You know, I never got a chance to meet him after that.
Yeah.
And not before that.
Yeah.
So the Black family reunion was just amazing. You got a chance to meet people that were from Africa, that came home from Africa to back to DC to experience that.
Yeah.
And everybody, it was just so communal. Everyone was just friendly and wanted to meet your child. If you had a child with you, and I had you with me when we got a chance to meet Alex Haley, and he was just so personable. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, I think about it now and I think to myself, wow, that was an opportunity.
That's amazing.
And I'm sure they have other events like that. But during that time, that was just, everybody was just there. Everybody, we knew what we were there for.
Yeah.
And we knew we were going to get a chance to meet these celebrities, but it was just amazing that they wanted to meet us.
Right.
Because when you went up to shake his hand and talk to him, I remember he talked to you just like he might have been your uncle.
He did. He did. Because he wanted to know, like, what, you know, what did you want to be when you grew up? So I think either you had said it or I had told him that I wanted to be a writer because mm-hmm. I had felt that way very young, just from being a reader, though. Yes. It was being a reader that made me go, whoever gets to write words and put their words in this book, you
yes.
know, like I want to do that.
Yes.
So I'm sure that either you said that or I did. And he talked and basically said, like, you can do that. You can do,
sure
you know,
did.
Anything you want to do. And it's like, you don't, there's so many things, you know, for those of you that our parents or our aunties, uncles here have different mentees, have children in your life in any way. It's like there's so many ways you can speak into the life of a child. And you don't know like how those words, those good words, you know, we hear so many stories where, and so many of us have experienced such negative words being spoken over us as children, but you can do a good thing when you can speak those good words into a child. Like I was just soaking up everything he said like a sponge. And of course I'm 8 years old. I have no way of knowing that one day I'm going to become this full-time writer, author, poet. I can never have guessed that I would actually get to have a career that I dreamed of as a little girl, but that totally influenced me to feel like, well, this is a real thing. You know, I'm talking to him, and I wasn't even old enough to have read Roots, but I had held the book in my hand, you know, because I think we had at least one copy at home or in the library, whatever. So those moments are so powerful and so important. I also talked in this about journaling, about how, you know, just that is also connected to my memory with you. I talked in this poem about the journals and the pens and those different, you know, things. And you used to say to me, and you said this to Kita as well, you would say that we should always have a place where we could be unedited. And you would say, you know, that's your journal is a good place to have that because that's a place that you write for yourself. You're not writing for anybody else to read it. No one has to be the judge of that. You should have some place where you get to put your words, you know, and that encouraged me to feel like my thoughts and feelings were important, whether or not I chose to share them in a public manner didn't matter. You know, in that moment, it mattered that me writing that. And I've passed that on to so many young women because it's such a powerful message, you know, that you gave to us.
Yes, it is. It is. It's important. And I'm glad that that influenced you that way. I just knew that it was something that was valuable. Like, for example, I went through a time in my life where I just wrote a word down. I couldn't even put a sentence to the word. And then I would just start looking up the words and say, why is this word coming to me? And what does it mean? And so I would journal just about that word. That would be the word of the day. For me. You know, like I went through a period of time where I would go, like, say I went to the post office and I would just be like, none of these people in here even know me. I could literally be invisible. You know, unless I just happened to run into somebody that I knew. So that day I wrote that my word for that day was invisible. So I went home and I started journaling, you know, my thoughts about the word invisible or what it means for a person when they feel invisible. And I think that helped me as far as growing up in the South and helped me to be able to recognize people and to recognize that this is a person. This is a person here that you're talking to. So try to think about, you know, think about how you would want to be treated or even if you don't know what the person is going through. Try not to treat the person like they're invisible. So just things like that, that may come to you. And you might get a poem while you're writing in your journal.
That's
true. It might be like you used to say, it might just be one line at first. And so I'm glad that that influenced you that way. And I just think, you know, now that I talk to different people, even, you know, great people, actors, writers that talk about journaling, I just love the fact that that's being brought. I just wish I knew it was a thing that other people were doing. I would have probably been a part of the community, you know?
Okay, so let me ask you these final two questions about the poem. Normally, Mom, I close the Behind the Poetry episodes. And y'all, my mom knows this because she is an avid listener of this podcast, even when I be on here cussing. That's why I go ahead and let her know on the recording so she can prepare herself. But she knows this. You know, I close the Behind the Poetry episodes. Normally, I talk about what it was like performing the poem for the first time and how I feel about the poem now. But I'm going to turn those two questions to you. And maybe you don't remember the first time because I know you've heard this poem now countless, countless times. But in the early first few times you heard this poem, like how did you feel hearing the poem for the first time?
I just felt so overwhelmingly happy. It just made me just so happy because the way you put, you know, at the beginning when you mentioned about the semicolon, I was like, that's just so ingenious. Who would have thought that a child of mine would be able to come up with this, even though I knew your gifting with your writing, but I was just so happy. I was just on cloud nine the first time that I could remember hearing it. I was just on cloud nine. I was just so proud and just so happy that you actually formulated a poem about mom and the mom that it was featuring was about me.
Yeah.
And the things that you remembered in the poem and some things that I just never even thought it impacted, you know, moms and, you know, like you said, aunties and cousins and mentors, we do different things. We're not even realizing how it's impacting the person, but it is impacting them.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, it's in a good way. But when I realized from that poem that you had actually been paying attention to some things in life, I said, wow. Wow, God. I was like, wow. And then you were obedient because you could have got the poem and just left it in your journal.
Right.
You could have decided you were only going to perform it for us personally when we were together, say on Mother's Day or,
right,
you know, other times. So the fact that you shared it with the world, I'm still overwhelmed when I hear it. I love it.
I can't remember exactly the first time that I did the poem, Mom, but I kind of feel like I did it several times without you being in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time, I do feel like I remember one of the first couple of times I was doing that in my poetry set and you were in the audience and feeling like the little choked up feelings, you know, of like, because it was always wonderful and emotional to do the poem,
mm-hmm,
even when you weren't there,
yeah,
because it was sort of this very fun and nostalgic poem that other people would sort of hear their own mom or different, like, you know, Ramona and Beezus and,
yes,
some of those things,
yes,
you know, people would be like, oh man, I remember that show. I remember those books, you know?
Yes.
And so it was always like very well received by the audience,
mm-hmm,
you know, but I feel like you were traveling with me or something.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I was like, oh y'all, I'm about to do this poem. And like, my mom's here, you know? So it was very emotional to sort of see you there in the audience as I'm talking about you, and then other people knowing you were in the audience. So,
mm-hmm,
they're all looking at you,
yes,
while I'm,
yes,
doing the poem, you know, and that was just a really beautiful moment because,
mm-hmm,
I'm not a poet that writes a whole lot of poems to people, you know,
right.
I only have a handful of poems like that, you know,
mm-hmm,
like I've written one to you. I've written one to Keita.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's very few poems like that I also would perform that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really beautiful. And y'all, of course, Mom has traveled with me many times now.
Yeah.
And that poem, you know, especially when I would be doing a lot of like women's events, like I would always include that poem in my set. And so even all the times you hear it, she would always tell me, I never get tired of it.
And that's true. I never get tired of it. It will make you cry depending on what you're going through. Even though you wrote it for me, with me in mind, other people, I'm sure it has an emotional impact on them,
yeah,
too, depending on where they are in their life at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. So last question, Mom, I wanted to know, now, how do you feel about that poem now that you've heard this poem countless times? You know, we've had a chance to talk through it. When you think about, I mean, that was almost 15 years ago when I was first writing that poem. Yeah. Yeah, that was almost 15 years ago, Mom. So now, having heard the poem,
mm-hmm,
and us having, you know, grown to what I love is this wonderful place in my relationship with you, you know, and I'm sure many of you listening will understand this part that I'm saying. But like, you know, you have a certain time that you're growing up and it's like your parents are your parents, you know,
right?
Your parents,
right,
are sort of like your teachers. You're just like, you're assuming there's no life other than when you're my mom and,
mm-hmm,
when you're my teacher, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you never see your teacher like out of the club or something like that.
Right,
you know?
Right,
like, you never,
right,
see her, you know, if you run into your teacher at the grocery store, you're like, you go to the grocery store, like you eat meals, you do things other than gray papers, you know? So I feel like when you're a kid, parents and teachers can have very like sort of one dimensional ways that you,
yes,
think of them, you know? And then as you get older, you then become able to see your parents more fully.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're able to, like, for me, I'm able to look at my mom and be like, hey, okay, well, my mom's my mom, but my mom is also a nurse who also had a career, you know, she's been in a career that she loves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my mom fell in love many,
mm-hmm,
times in her,
mm-hmm,
life and,
mm-hmm,
danced on the dance floor. You know, you just have a more like rounded version of your parent. And I have enjoyed this season of time with you where, I mean, you're still my mom, but also like, I really like you as a person, you know, like we can we can get in a car and like go to Target and have a good time. We can go across the world and have a good time, you know,
yes,
and I really love that for us. And I love that for me because it gives me an opportunity to get to know you as my mom, the woman.
Yeah.
And like, now you can tell me a few stories that you couldn't tell me when I was 10.
Right.
But now you're
right.
Like, well, you grown too. So let me tell you what really happened now that I can speak on it.
Exactly.
So I would just love to hear as we're closing the episode from you, mom, like how you feel now having, you know, heard this poem, you know, now over these years and what you think about that and any other closing thoughts you want to tell us on your birthday episode.
Oh, my birthday episode. I just love how you put the poem together. And I just love how it reaches me and it reaches other people. Whenever I've been traveling with you and you did the poem, other people will always come up to me afterward and say, wow, how did you do this? I'm like, I have no formula. I just encouraged her to do what she was good at and what she loved, and she did it, you know. And so I just love that poem, and I'm glad that you still have it in your library of poems to perform, and that we got a chance to talk about it. And when you talk about the books, the different books that I had, because now I'm going back through my library
right.
of the books, you know, okay, these books I have to keep. This is a new one that I heard about through Amina. So I have to keep her book over here to make sure that I go back to her book. And then some of the books I'm downloading, you know, I got to get back to the poetry. You and I, that'll be a conversation that we'll have to have.
Yeah.
I got to find out some of the poets
yeah.
that I don't know about
yeah.
that may have books that I may want to listen to some of their poetry, read some of their poetry. But I just love it. I just think, you know, it's a good way to have your relationship. And by me having daughters, it gave me an opportunity to raise y'all. But now I get an opportunity to actually, it's a daughter, mother-daughter relationship, but we have a friendship
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact that you brought up about we might not always agree with everything, but our family is the type of family, we're very outspoken. So we're easy to agree to disagree. But tomorrow when you talk to us, that's not even an issue.
Period.
We're not a family. We get it out of our system.
Yeah.
By talking it over.
That's true.
And I love the fact, closing, I love the fact that I can call you and I can say, I got some tea to share with you today. And you'll answer me back with an emoji. And I know we're going to have yes. a good conversation, whether it's 5 minutes or 15 minutes.
Come on, tea emoji. See, now I get to enjoy double the tea, Mom.
Double the tea.
Uh-huh. See?
Yes.
See how we did that?
Yes.
That worked out.
Yes.
Mom, thank you so much for being willing to spend some of your birthday recording this today. I really appreciate it. And I have loved having you on the podcast to do this behind the poetry. That this was very special. So thank you for coming into the living room. We appreciate you.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad to be in her living room. I love it. I can't wait to see another episode other than my episode I'm going to listen to, but of course other episodes, and I've gone back and listened to some previous episodes. So it's wonderful. So keep up the good work. This was just a treat for me.
Her with Amina Brown is produced by Matt Owen for Soul Graffiti Productions, as a part of the Seneca Women Podcast Network in partnership with iHeartRadio. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.
This is Amy Brown from 4 Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Are you looking to build this year? If so, there is no better time than right now to start planning and to get your spot on the construction schedule. If you need a garage, a stall barn, a storage for vehicles, RV, boat, collectibles, or even a shop for your farm, hobbies, or car restoration projects, visit MortonBuildings.com and start your construction process. With superior materials, craftsmanship, best-in-class warranty, Morton Buildings are made to last for generations. At Morton, the difference is in the details. From their cutting-edge innovations to their craftsmen in the field, they are dedicated to surpassing expectations. Their legacy of excellence spans more than 120 years, and Morton Buildings is 100% employee-owned with more than 250,000 satisfied customers. That means they're the industry leader you can trust. When you choose Morton, you'll experience quality at every step of the building process, starting before the walls even go up. Visit MortonBuildings.com to get started today.